Thank you for joining us at the i3 Detroit Hour. Coming up, First Robotics is an organization that allows young adults to learn electronics, engineering, and intense competition in a hands-on way. What could be truer to the hacker spirit? Please listen to the first half of our program and learn about First Robotics from students participating this year. We at i3 Detroit are happy to have opened our doors to these teens and hope that by spreading the message, more hackerspaces will be moved to participate in this outstanding program. After that, stay tuned as fellow i3 Detroiter Nicholas Britsky and I chew the fat about the Consumer Electronics Show, hackerspaces finding their way with local businesses, advertising, and whatever else we feel like. In particular, big kudos to our long-distance colleague Bree Pettis and his team for showing off the MakerBot at CES this year. All music we use in our program was found online under the Creative Commons license. To learn more about the music used in our program, please email us at contact@i3detroit.com. Thank you, and please enjoy the show. This is i3 Detroit.
And a 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, first stands for... for inspiration and recognition of science and technology. And ever since I started FIRST, I started hanging out with the right people, the right crowds. Before, I didn't really care about school or what was going on after school. Graduation was like, all right, that's what everyone goes through. And now I look forward to it.
Thank you for joining us today. This is Ross Smith, speaking to you from the i3 Detroit Hackerspace in Ferndale, Michigan. In our last installment, I spoke with Ted Hansen and Benjamin Graham, members of our hackerspace and local mentors in the FIRST Robotics program. They are working with the Turbo Trojans, being the FIRST Robotics team at Clawson High School. The robot build season officially began on Saturday, January the 8th, as this year's contest was revealed on NASA television. During the next 6 weeks, they will design, build, and test a robot to play competitively against machines built by other student teams. Over the next few episodes of our program, we will follow the Turbo Trojans. We will watch over their shoulders as they work, converse, and learn hands-on how to build a robot. We will also speak with their mentors and teachers, who are ultimately responsible for bringing the FIRST program to their school. After the 6 week build season, the Turbo Trojans enter district level tournaments, where they are grouped into teams of three called alliances. This means that rather than pitting robots head to head, the tournaments will pit robots in bouts of 3-on-3. Alan Turner is a senior at Clawson High School. He was on the Turbo Trojans drive team last year in a competitive season that took the Trojans to the state level. He explains the FIRST Robotics tournament structure to me.
In Michigan, there's the most teams, probably because of the, large engineering base in the auto industry. A team entering the competition has the option of several different districts competitions that are run basically like a tournament. So each team is paired with two other teams. Each team has their own robot, and they form an alliance of three robots. Basically, all the teams are put in a random generator, and then they're formed into a bunch of different matches, which pair two different alliances together. And then they compete in the particular year's game. If you score enough points during each of the matches, they've got a complicated scoring system that's supposed to be really even, then you get into the finals competition. The first 8 seeds get to choose their other two alliance partners, and then they compete in a tournament. If you win that tournament or do well enough in your 2 district competitions, then you make it to the state finals at Eastern Michigan University, or at least that's where it was last year. And then it's the exact same thing, except with a larger number of teams, and they're usually a bit more experienced at the state competition. And then if you make it to the finals there and win, or you get enough points, then you make it to the finals down in, last year it was Atlanta, Georgia, and I think this year it's in St. Louis.
The competitive game played by the robots changes each year. This guarantees new strategic and design challenges every season. Steve and Dan Carpenter are twin brothers and sophomores at Clawson High.
Last year was called Breakaway, and it was pretty much like a soccer game. We had like alliances of 3 teams each.
You just had, there was 2 goals on your side and 2 goals on the other side. You had to score goals into your side's goals.
Last year's game paralleled a soccer match in many ways. In successful alliances, the robots played specific team roles, like blocking, shooting, and pinning down competitors.
When we did our brainstorming, we tried to identify kind of what are some roles that robots are going to play in it, and what are we going to try to make our robot be able to contribute to the other team. Because there's no one robot that's going to be able to dominate everyone regardless of who's on their team. You need to be able to contribute something to your alliance partners. So last year, our robot was really maneuverable and was able to push balls around quite well. And that's what did it for us. We had a really quick robot that could get around defenders. While we were maneuverable, there were robots that were I don't want to say brutish, but really powerful, that were able to really knock around the other robots and just kind of get them out of the way, defend goals, and really protect it so the other team couldn't score. There were robots that were really adept at knocking balls into our scoring zone so that, like, our robot could score easier, always had a ball there to score with. Mm-hmm. And basically the other two roles were really, strong defense and knocking robots around, dominating that, and then getting balls moved around.
On game day, the Turbo Trojans have to do more than cooperate with unknown teammates from other schools. Many hands and eyes are needed to control that one robot as well, with individual teammates handling the weaponry as the drive team steers the wheels. Jamie Ortiz de Leon is a sophomore at Clawson High School. Her friend, Jamie Scribner, is a freshman.
We had to play soccer, and we had trouble at first controlling where it would kick, but we added a bunch of stuff to the kicker. And at the last competition, they added the
giant, like, moving wall thing. It used a pneumatic cylinder to pop up and kind of, like, deflect the ball to where we wanted it to go.
And I had a button on the controller that I had to control, and I would listen to our coach that was standing behind us that was also a part of the drive team, or the driver, and they would tell me when to use it, so I'd pop it up and be in control of the kicker, too, so it was fun.
This year, it's a lot different in that the field is wide open. Last year, there were kind of these large bumps in the middle that our robot couldn't traverse, and there were tunnels that you could actually go underneath as well. So those were two means of movement last year.
The terrain in last year's game presented a lot of challenges, especially for large appendages on the robot that could be broken off by enemies. But just because terrain is difficult doesn't mean you can't get a lucky break.
We had the, I guess, wall, and it was popped up, and they were trying to push us into the tunnel. Well, our wall, the angle of it was too high, so they pushed us in, and they were trying to break that part of it, so we couldn't use that anymore. And there was a ball that was coming through, and it rolled off that wall through our robot and through the other robot that was pushing us, and we scored a goal.
Besides the elements of chance, you can see that successful robots are ones designed for the game in question. Which brings us at last to this year's game, entitled Logo Logic.
This year, the game is basically you're trying to grab these inner tubes that are shaped in like a square, a circle, and a triangle, and also they're colored like the first logo. And you have to take them across the field and put them on pegs that are in front of your, like, driving area, basically, and arrange them in the order of the first logo for points, and then there's higher zones that you can put them on for bonus points, basically. So you're trying to get them across the field and put them on the pegs.
Teams who can arrange the colored inner tubes to match the first logo will win more points than if they mismatched the colors or shapes. Placing the inner tubes on higher pegs instead of lower ones will also win more points. A unique twist this year comes in a tiny package called the Minibot. In the last moments of the game, a miniature, separate robot can be deployed and score enormous points for the Alliance.
The poles are probably like 10 feet, a little taller than that. And in the last 10 or 15 seconds, you have to deploy your Minibot, mm-hmm. and it has to climb the pole. And the first one who gets to the top, it gets automatically 30 points.
And then it goes 20, 15, and 10. Gotcha. Whoever's first, second, third, fourth.
So it's going to be a big advantage, just 30 points right off.
Naturally, at the very start of the build season, the Turbo Trojans have many untried ideas of the best way to win. However, it has been said that loose lips sink ships, and the same can be said of robots. Mum's the word for now, as this episode will be broadcast at a time when other teams could use these state secrets. At this point, you've heard about the first robotics tournament structure. You know how the robots will compete against each other in alliances of three. And certainly, you can imagine the design and strategic challenges these games involve. Now you will hear these students give you their take on FIRST Robotics as a program and how it affects their lives. Jamie Ortiz de Leon is a sophomore at Clawson High School. Her friend, Jamie Scribner, is a freshman. Both of them participated in the FIRST LEGO League, a variation on the FIRST program for middle school students. Jamie Ortiz was a mentor to the younger children and describes her experience to me.
When you actually saw the kids accomplish what they were trying to do, and you just saw like their faces light up because of how much fun they were having and how they did it on their own because their mentor said, "I don't know how to do this. You guys are going to do this," even though he did know how to do it. And he basically let them do it on their own. So they felt accomplished. And they were excited about it, and they'd come up and they'd run up to you and they'd be like, "Oh my gosh, look at what I did. Come watch this."
As any seasoned team builder knows, putting a bunch of people in the same room does not make them a team. Building that team as a cooperative unit has plenty of challenges of its own.
Last year, we had, we had a big group to start out with, but they started leaving one by one, and that left us with a small team in the end,
okay,
who we all grew close with, so we're like a family. And taking on the, rookies, you could say, to our team, it's been kind of difficult because their thinking is different than ours, and they're not used to, like, our family and how we run things. And since they didn't have that much experience with the robot, we're like, but we're still, mentoring them slowly to become part of our family.
Well, some of them were, like, cutting things off the robot that we needed on there. I mean, they didn't know. I mean, we weren't really telling them what to do. You know, they just had their hands in there. Like, they turned it on while we were all touching it, and it was kind of weird. You know, I mean, it's like seniors and freshmen, how the seniors all help the freshmen find their classes. It's kind of like what we have to do.
I think it's a good and bad thing, because it gives us patience.
The two Jamies are no stranger to this sort of adjustment. Last year, they were the only young women on the robot's build and design team. Fitting in was a challenge at first.
Last year, what we did was we tried to break up into different teams, and it turned out that most of the girls that were on our team went to marketing, and the only girls that were on the build and design team were me and Jamie. So we basically were with a huge group of guys, so...
How did that make you feel?
It kind of made me feel, like, at first I felt weak and awkward because, like, we felt like we weren't in the right place, but after a while we felt like we were one of the guys, basically.
I shouldn't have been so surprised when the Jamies told me about the pranks that have been pulled on them.
Oh, I'd love to hear about this.
Okay,
I won't tell anyone, I swear. Your secret's safe with me.
It's recorded, but...
Yeah, you know.
Okay, there was two that were pulled on me last year. Ben told us to go and get some pneumatic fluid. And I knew what pneumatics were, but I wasn't thinking. It was in the heat of the moment. So we go up to the station and ask them for pneumatic fluid. And they start laughing at us.
I was tricked into finding a left-handed screwdriver.
We were prepping up for our first competition, and we were putting everything in boxes, and they hand me a paint can, and, like, the spray paint can, and they tell me to shake it till the little ball on the inside is gone, so you can't hear it anymore, so I'm shaking it for, like, an hour.
As they said, they're just hanging with the guys now that Jamie and Jamie have been on the build team for a year. Pulling each other's legs is more or less proof that you've made it, and they have assured me they have plenty of prank ammunition in store for this year's rookies.
Last year, I had always kind of liked math and had an aptitude in math, and my Mr. Kiefer, our calculus teacher at high school, was trying to start up a robotics team, and I wasn't doing anything in the winter season, so I kind of got recruited by my dad and some teachers, and I just kind of joined on.
This is the last portion of today's first coverage. I asked each of these Turbo Trojans what impact FIRST Robotics has had on their lives. The answers are various, interesting, and simply put, they speak for themselves.
Before we started FIRST, I really didn't know anything about robotics or wiring or just anything. Mm-hmm. And now, like, I can relate how I use, like, math and geometry into, actually building the robot.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you have to apply, it sounds like, obviously, what you're learning in class and a lot of things that you're probably picking up here from, like, the mentors and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, there's a Sokotoa thing I learned here that I put to, like, use on a geometry test last year. We have people, like, on the team that are learning how to program.
I feel like I look at, like, my TV in a different way. Like, the TV and all the wires, like, I know how to hook up my Wii. Like, if I had to do it blindfolded, I could. Because I took off all the wires and labeled them, and then put them all back in their right places on the robot.
Over the summer, my dad had to change the brakes on the car, and he didn't know who to pick between me or my little brother, and he's only 12. So he was like, all right, Jamie, you're going to come help me. And I didn't want to, but I got under the car, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is dirty. And then before you know it, I'm putting grease on my face and just having fun with it. So I guess it's just taught me to, like, have fun with things that I might not want to do because it'll make it more enjoyable. My dad said that I turned into his second son because I'm helping him around the house a lot more with those different kinds of things.
I really love the atmosphere of the I3 place we have here because, like, last year there were so many adults here that do what I want to go into, engineering, and they're programmers, and they know all this information about it, and I can just ask them a question, and they can tell me the answer to it. And just being able to work with them and ask them questions about, like, what goes into a gearbox, how to match up, like, programming to the robot, how to fix the computer and wire circuitry is just invaluable to my knowledge.
That's really cool to hear. So it's the case then where they would sort of get you pointed in the right direction, I take it, and then from there you'd be like, okay, I can do this. I can take this on.
Right, right. Until I mess it up again, and then they need to bump me in the right direction another time, and then finally I get it.
Well, FIRST stands for for inspiration and recognition of science and technology. And ever since I started FIRST, I started hanging out with the right people, the right crowds. Before, I didn't really care about school or what was going on after school. Graduation was like, all right, that's what everyone goes through. And now I look forward to it.
Before I joined FIRST, or the FIRST robotics team, I had no idea what I was going to do. And being with all these programmers and engineers has really pushed me to really consider mechanical engineering as a career path. And so I'm looking at Kettering University. They've got a great program there, and I'm seriously considering going into it.
I asked Alan if he had any parting words for an international audience. He had this to say.
A lot of the events, at least the finals in St. Louis this year, last year, a lot of the events were televised, and a lot of the videos were put on YouTube, some of the highlights of it. And I'd ask you to search on YouTube, look up FIRST 2009 highlights, or FIRST Robotics 2008 highlights, and check it out. See if it's something you'd like to be a part of.
If you have any questions about this podcast or about the FIRST Robotics program in general, please email us at contact@i3detroit.com. Join us again in February for our next installment as we speak to the Turbo Trojans and their mentors about this year's exciting build season. Thank you for joining us. I3 Detroit Hour. This is Ross Smith, and joining me is Nick Britsky.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Nick. So as I understand it, you recently had a chance to go to the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yeah, I was one of those lucky geeks that got selected to go, and the great part about it is it was covered by work. So, how great is that? Get to go to CES and get it all paid for by work.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet deal. So tell me, what did you see?
Yeah, it was, you know what? Because I was there for work, I didn't get to geek out as much as I really would have liked to. But there were a couple trends that we saw as we were wandering around the events. One big thing was mobility. You know, there's everything's kind of getting smaller and more pocket-oriented. It's actually interesting that I would say probably half the people there had an iPad and were wandering around with it. And using a really, really great application that CES developed to be used to navigate around the fair. Additionally, that app actually had a pretty cool interactive map where you could type in whatever booth you were looking for and get there fairly easily. So my hat's off to CES for doing that.
That's really cool. So they anticipated enough people having iPads to make the development and distribution of that app a feasible thing. That's very cool.
Yeah, and let me correct that. It actually was an iPhone app that you kind of blew up the little times two button.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but it still had a ton of functionality, and while you did have to pay for the wireless, I think it was like $14. It was still a fairly good signal.
Very cool.
Some of the other things were their connectivity. You know, taking devices that don't typically connect online, at least traditionally, and adding online to them. You know, we're all seeing TVs these days that are coming out with online, especially with Netflix. But now there's going to be Blu-ray players and other different consumer audiovisual electronic pieces that'll have connectivity. But one of the interesting things is actually the GE booth, General Electric, had appliances that would connect to the different systems in your house through the router. So, you know, you could get like updates when your laundry's done or, you know, different things that happen with the oven. Very, very unique thing there.
That's amazing. You know, you've heard about those sorts of technological advances for ages, and now they're becoming a reality. Soon they'll be in your own household.
Yeah, you know, I think people are demanding them. And so as they see the market growing, you know, they're not going to make these products for, you know, 10 people in the world to buy. They want to see a mass of people if they're going to, you know, switch their factory to, connectivity mode.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure that fit into a larger spectrum of home automation systems and technology that you had a chance to see there.
Oh, yeah. Control 4 had a fantastically huge booth. They're actually one of the big, big companies that does home automation that I think is slowly getting the concept that, you know, kind of your everyday American wants some home automation. Certainly Lutron is doing the same thing. Lutron actually has patents on the dimmers that, you know, most everyone has in their house. And so they have tons of products that integrate. Interesting, and I flip back to International Builders Show because that's where I'm at right now. And they actually have a lot of products that are working with Z-Wave and X-Bit and Zigbee because those are kind of the home automation standards for wireless. And they actually have some window shades that are completely battery powered. The battery lasts for 5 years and you can hook that up to Z-Wave. So you could be sitting on your bed with your iPad and close your shades.
Wow, that's pretty sweet. You hear about these kinds of things in, you know, hackerspaces. I mean, at i3 Detroit, we have a building automation working group to, you know, look at when the door is open and closed and when the coffee pot is on. So cool to think that's going to be coming to home soon.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, people have been doing it kind of DIY for years on the small scale. And, of course, rich people have been doing it on the multimillion-dollar scale. But it'll be great to see people that, you know, have very human budgets of a couple thousand dollars to be doing it in their house. Let's see. One of the other things, cloud is something that obviously kind of connects with connectivity. As things get connected to the internet, they're going to want to be able to access data. And lots of things are moving to the cloud. I think some people use it as a buzzword, but other people are certainly using it as an effective centralized storage for different things. I mean, look at Netflix. Netflix is kind of a cloud computing application, and they're getting huge. There's actually one TV company that is, and I believe this is a rumor, not sure it's confirmed yet, is going to be putting a big red Netflix button on their remote. And, you know, this is such a holy grail for third-party companies that are integrating with consumer technology to have their logo on this piece of equipment.
Yeah, it's like if a comic artist, you want to be the household name who has the comic, you know, clipped out from the newspaper and on the fridge. You know, that's the icon that says you've made it, you know. And if you can be like a Netflix or another media service that gets on the remote control, you know that you're set.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, certainly great things are happening here. And I really wish I would have had more time to geek out. But, you know, it just had to do my work thing. And I did manage to get some time, though, however, to look at some things for I3. And a couple of those things, I mean, just a number of places are very interested with hackerspaces and what's kind of happening there. And it really depended on how cool I thought the booth was, if I think that they would be interested in, you know, doing something for a hackerspace. You know, certain things like I probably wouldn't go to Panasonic right off the bat and, you know, say, hey, we're a hackerspace, you know, would you be interested in donating something or working on a project with us? But certainly things that were a little more hacker-centric, like who would be a good example of that? Well, like Wacom. Wacom is a technology I'm sure you're familiar with in the creative advertising industry.
Oh, I certainly am, and,
yeah. Yeah, you use them every day probably.
I do.
And I talked to them, and, you know, they have a lot of neat products. And I'm like, hey, you know, we're with this hackerspace, and, you know, we'd love to maybe do some cool video or do some project utilizing your product. Would you be interested in donating or letting us trial a couple of units? And they were incredibly interested in that. It was very exciting.
Yeah, these are the sorts of things you don't know until you go out, you extend a hand, and you ask, just as you did. Something that I'm curious about, and I'm sure many listeners are, is how you approached even the subject of hackerspace with some of these companies. There's this sensation in the hackerspace movement that it's such an unusual type of social organism. It bears a lot of explaining. But it sounds like some of these people picked up on the idea right away.
Yeah, you know, and again, I kind of looked at them and figured out how cool was the company. Did I want to approach them as a hackerspace? And certainly some companies were very familiar with hackerspaces. One of them actually was Intel, which I was kind of surprised knew all about hackerspaces and was very interested in talking to us. Whereas some companies, you know, were a little more shy and weren't as informed. Someone like Swiss Army Knife, you know, very old school company, been around for probably over 100 years. But I kind of went to them and said, hey, we're a bunch of geeks. We have this public workshop, and we'd love to do some cool project with you because we think your tools are, you know, fantastic pieces of technology, them and, you know, certainly Leatherman, that, you know, we'd love to try to get something together for you.
Yeah, certainly the appeal of their typical user, they can't say no to that. And if you describe a collective or a community where their users are going to gather, they, of course, would be interested. So that's very cool. It's cool that the appeal was pretty broadly felt by the sound of it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe it. Let me just kind of go over. I mentioned Wacom. I talked to Airfoil. They make a Parrot, which is a styrofoam-based quadcopter. So, you know, styrofoam and some electronics and plastics. And those actually had two giant booths at CES. And I mentioned to them, you know, we're I3 Detroit. We've been utilizing our little copters to have races around I3 through Hula Hoops. Why don't we do like a sponsored race or something? And they thought it was great. I mean, they're a very young, hip company, and they totally got hackerspaces.
Very cool. Yeah. So if those do come around, we can have a big public event. We can open it up, have people come in. They can check out the Airfoil. They can visit I3. They can participate in the race. And everyone all around gets a little more exposure, gets a little something out of it.
No, yeah, it's great. I mean, these are things that PR people, being in advertising myself, we love these cool tie-ins that are very unique, gets an audience that, you know, I'm sure a lot of us don't watch a lot of cable TV, don't interact with a lot of print media. So it's very hard to get kind of our age bracket. So I think events like this are fantastic to get to them.
Absolutely, yeah.
I also talked to Microsoft because they had a huge Kinect layout there.
That must have been something to say, yeah.
Yeah, no, there were probably six kind of, you know, booths that had the Kinect in there. And, you know, I don't think I found the right people because they were kind of meh and didn't get it. So, you know, the more I reach out, I'm sure I'll find the right person at Microsoft. Because I3 actually has talked to Microsoft in the past on sponsorships. So I think the right contact is out there.
Mm.
Sennheiser does a lot of really high-end audio equipment. And I reached out to them for the podcast trailer we're working on. They were very interested in, you know, sponsoring that.
Yeah, please expand on this podcast trailer. It's a project we've talked about a fair amount at I3. And I'd like our listeners to hear more about this.
Yeah, the podcast trailer is a dream of mine. I've been a podcaster, you know, for a number of years. Did a long-running podcast that probably no one heard, but it's Nat Lyon Podcast. Bill in the space also does a podcast that I think has been running for longer than that. I want to say he said, you know, 8 or 10 years. But what we want to do with the podcast trailer is have a mobile setup that we can take to events. It's reasonably soundproof or resistant. We can bring in four people, talk about I3 things, have a cool place to hang out. And just be a neat little showpiece that will be branded with i3 and go around to different events and do podcasting and audio recording.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. It's a VIP interview room on wheels. We could take it to Maker Faire Detroit. We could take it out of state if we felt like, just to be a gigantic presence for i3 Detroit, but for podcasting in particular. I'm very excited by the project, and now that we have the actual trailer at our space to begin work, it's just so much – it's coming to life to me. You know, I can look at it and I can see the potential, especially once we can get more materials into it, which I think is something you're pursuing right now.
Yeah, so we're in the second week of January. We've picked up the trailer. We've demoed half the inside. It needs a little bit of work, but you know, we only paid $300, so we can't expect a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And my goal was to get a bunch of sponsors between products and money, and make this really cool thing that can travel around, and we can also pimp it out to these sponsors so they can get some PR, and we can get some added value product from them.
Yeah, it's one more dimension where a hackerspace can build something and provide something of value to, nearby businesses and people in the community. They can come in and see what a hackerspace is all about, and we can go out and help them, reach and connect with their audiences. It's a pretty cool thing when we can bring a business in and see what we're about and give them something that they can take to their own audience. You know, that sort of interoperability is something I look forward to doing more with i3 out in, our community and with our businesses.
And I think as we grow, those natural extensions will happen automatically.
Mm.
All right. Can you pause the recording, by any chance?
I can, yes.
Yeah, so the trailer is just going to be a unique opportunity that I think we're really going to push as kind of a private funding sponsorship opportunity with different companies around the U.S. And that i3 is going to benefit, as I mentioned, by getting this really cool trailer. So it's going to be a unique opportunity with seeing how can advertising work with this public hackerspace.
Yeah, it's an experiment in a way. I don't think... I don't know of many hackerspaces that have done this before. There is the whole Challenge the Machine. Do you remember this? It was an event that involved five hackerspaces. It was sponsored by Scion, I want to say.
Yep,
Each of these five hackerspaces got like $3,000, and they worked on a project to build some like crazy contraption out of repurposed materials. It was a very cool contest, but it was kind of an experiment in sponsorship and advertising,
And I think we're all trying to find out how can we work with businesses. Actually, Pumping Station One, kind of our sister organization in Chicago, they did a partnership with Craftsman when Craftsman set up the Craftsman Experience, which is almost kind of like a professional hackerspace.
Ooh.
And I actually met with them today and started chatting with them. Very cool company, very interested in doing these new opportunities. So... Make was out there for that opportunity. They put together like this futuristic Santa sled. And if you're not familiar with that project, I encourage you to go seek out Make and Craftsman and go read about that.
That is pretty cool. The Craftsman Experience, you said? I don't know very much about this.
You know what? It's only open in Chicago. They don't have plans of opening other ones right now because I was asking about Detroit. But yeah, it's open Thursday through Sunday. There's an auto station, a gardening station, and a woodworking station. You can go there, learn classes, have classes on those tools. They have a different speaker each week. And, just kind of a unique thing. And it's really cool to see craftsmen grasping at a kind of a hackerspace DIY mentality.
That is very cool. So people can stop by. Are they able to bring, like, raw materials, for example, and, like, work on a project there if it's under the auspices of a class or an instructor? How does that work?
That I don't know. I would... tell people to go check it out as far as online and see the details. I haven't been out there. I actually missed when it launched. It didn't open with a ton of fanfare, but it definitely is something cool that people are doing.
Totally. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah. Let's see here. Some of the other companies, I'll just kind of list off the other companies I talked to. I talked to Antec. I talked to Corsair. Talked to NVIDIA. NVIDIA actually had a very, very good showing at CES. Not only did they have... a computer built into a keg that actually dispensed beer.
How wow, cool is nice.
But they're doing a partnership with BMW to use their graphic chips in like super pimp-ass graphical displays for maps. So, I mean, yes, I want to buy a BMW with an NVIDIA graphics chip.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. I talked to Audio Technica, who also does audio recording equipment. I talked to Stickcam. I talked to GM, which actually brought in a small electric vehicle. It's a little two-seater that looks like almost like a Segway with a bubble over it.
Interesting. And
these are called the GM Envies. I actually have it's a concept car. I think there's four or five of them. I have an inside source to GM, and they probably don't think they'll ever sell, but they're a neat thing to bring around to show off at different events. Let's see here. I know Ustream was there in pretty full force. The Ustream guys are cool when they walk around shows because they have these backpacks that show the video of them live streaming on their site. And they all the gear with them. So that's really cool to see.
No kidding. Yeah, the connectivity there must be insane. So the Ustream guys were there mainly for their software presence, or are they going into like the hardware? Were they mainly about or the streaming?
You know, I think it was more of a content play. Like they were getting more content to have up on their site, and maybe kind of demonstrate to people that, you know, here's what you can do with this Ustream technology. I'm sure Stickcam is doing something very similar.
Very cool. Gotcha.
Wired had a very huge presence that had almost a Make-like feel to it. You know, interesting. I talk about Make is that our boy Bree Pettis was there. He had MakerBot at CES.
Hey, all right, good deal.
I mean, there is a maker. You know, from, you know, kind of grassroots in NYC Resistor. He's grown up with Make and Etsy and all those good guys. And it's very cool to see a guy. And not only that, he actually recognized who I was. So that's cool.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, it's so good seeing, like you said, really kind of a self-made sort of dude, you know, prospering with his project and making it to CES. That kind of blows me away.
Yeah. And he actually had a staff of like five people. He had probably nine machines. i3 Detroit just picked up our machine a couple months ago. And it's fantastic to see a maker selling stuff at such a big event like CES.
Yeah, so high profile. Wow. Well, certainly raising the bar, you know, for anyone else who's starting their business at Hackerspace.
Absolutely. For those of you out there who are familiar with Microsoft Surface, 3M has a competitive product through their Touch Services division. And I started talking to them about, you know, maybe putting one in the Hackerspace, and they're totally geeked about that. So I'll be reaching out to them.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do with a project like that. You know, it's everything from games to interactive data displays to, like, you know, maybe video walls, right? I would love to have a multi-touch style video wall with a nearby space. Say Pumping Station 1 or someone else had a similar multi-touch interface with a camera pointing toward them and being displayed on the, you know, touch interface like a surface in a different space. That would be amazing.
Like a live window almost.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. So last of my meetings was Fulton Innovation. This is a Michigan company that makes technology similar to the PowerMat, you know, this wireless energy transfer. And in addition to that, they make these little printed circuits that you can apply to consumer packaged goods, like Cheerios and, you know, 409. And what you can do is take the logo, like the Cheerios logo, and make it light up when it's sitting on a shelf that's equipped with this wireless technology.
Whoa. So if you pull this box of Cheerios off the shelf, are you saying the light will go out?
Yep, the light goes out. But while you're walking up and down the you know the aisles of the store, you see all these blinking things. It's totally like Blade Runner.
Wow.
So
yeah, no kidding. It's like – it just reminds me even of like Harry Potter, you know, how you've got the newspapers and all of these clippings
yes.
with moving photographs, right? Suddenly we're going to have that on our packaging.
You know, and I think that technology will take a little while to grasp. But, you know, certainly once that happens, you know, super flat LCDs that are disposable and attached to products are going to be the next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the cool thing about them, again, they're Michigan-based. I had mentioned I'm from Detroit i3, you know, Hackerspace, i3 Detroit. And they're like, oh, yeah, we've heard of you. I'm like, shut up. No, you haven't. They're like, yes, I'm in PR. It's my job to hear about cool guys like you. So that was super exciting to actually hear someone that has heard about i3 Detroit with a little bit of prompting and, you know, just say like, you guys are always welcome to come check out our stuff. So that's very cool.
That is really exciting. Yeah. I mean, coupled with the fact that, as I understand it, they are out on the west side of the state, somewhere around the Grand Rapids area.
Yes.
Yeah, we're in contact with a maker in that area of the state who is interested in starting up his own space, and he and I are going to have a phone conversation about, yeah, so what does it take to get a hackerspace off the ground? What sort of commercial property would you be looking at? What sort of timeline? And if there is a local company there, all about us and all about hackerspaces, you know, maybe we can find this guy a little mentor, a little commercial support.
Yeah, it's interesting because you were saying that you were on hackerspaces.org this morning saying that Detroit's turning into a little hotbed of hackerspace activity.
Yeah, there was a curiosity. There was a hacker from France, actually, who wrote out and said, I've heard of so many hackers talking about Detroit like it's going to be this new hackers town, that there is this potential and it's being realized with all these hackerspaces springing up. Some makers are actually even moving out to Metro Detroit to be part of this, the little renaissance that we have going on. And, you know, I have to admit, I was a little bit flattered to hear this kind of attention coming our way. But it makes a kind of sense. You know, in Metro Detroit, you've got really low commercial rental prices now because a lot of businesses have unfortunately closed or moved out of state. You've got a lot of people who are looking for a community they can hold on to in uncertain times with layoffs. And you've got a lot of engineers. You have a lot of people with that strong technical background on account of the auto industry. So I'm kind of looking forward to Metro Detroit, to Michigan in general, being a kind of place for this hacker space renaissance to take place.
I mean, it's interesting to be brought up is that i3 Detroit was the first one that did this. We started growing the space. You know, shortly after that, Omnicore Detroit started, founded by Jeff Sturgis, who came from NYC Resistor. All Hands Active in Ann Arbor started up. And then, lo and behold, Tech Shop out in California was just like, hey, maybe there is a market out here. They're talking about opening up a space around here. Mm-hmm. MakerWorks out in Ann Arbor is going to be a Tech Shop-like place, but a little more grassroots. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have a lot of things happening in Detroit right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the more people I talk to, the more interest I hear about the whole hackerspace movement. You're right. There are many that are coming up just in this next year and past that. It just makes you wonder what that fabric is going to be like. As there are more hackerspaces, we won't necessarily have to compete, but we will have to interoperate. We will have to have a sort of regional community here.
Yeah, and a lot of people have kind of, when we first heard Tech Shop was coming out to our space, they were freaking out a little bit because Tech Shop does have so many fantastic tools that are available to them. But I think something that they don't have, or at least won't initially have, is that community that we've built at i3. You know, the people that just come to i3, hang out, you know, shoot the shit, and just talk with each other.
Absolutely. And when I have spoken to our members about this, and some of them have spoken to me about it at great length, they've said that it's really an apples to oranges comparison. You can go to Tech Shop and get access to a fabulous CNC mill that's always perfectly clean because someone is paid to maintain it. Well, you pay to maintain it out of your, you know, higher monthly expenses, your training classes. But you only have access to a tool. And when you're on that tool and you, say, break a cutting head or another piece of equipment, you think to yourself, well, this is owned by Tech Shop. It's just a piece of corporate equipment and someone's going to take care of it. It's very different when you're at i3 Detroit or you're at a much more grassroots community type hackerspace because you know when you're on the mill in the back, it's owned by Nick Britsky, for example. So you have mm-hmm. to take care of these tools because you hang out with Nick and you know that he earns a paycheck and he helps pay for these tools. So the community factor, not just the social life, but also understanding these tools are owned by people that you care about, it does make a difference.
Not to mention, you know, Nick Britsky knows where you live. He can find your address.
He can find your kneecaps with the baseball bat, yes.
Totally, totally. That's the mentality we're trying to push at Hackerspaces, is busting out kneecaps.
You got it. Yes, it's all about the gangs.
Well, let's circle back to CES. Last thing I have to talk about is CES, of course, brings out tons of celebrities. You know, I didn't see anyone huge, huge star power, but I did see a lot of geeks with star power. A couple guys I got some pictures with. For those of you familiar with Buzz Out Loud and now This Week in Tech, Tom Merritt was there, and he was running around. This Week in Tech had a huge booth doing interviews with people around there. Of course, it makes sense. CNET also had a huge booth there. Running around with Tom Merritt was Brian Brushwood. He does Scam School on the same network, and he's actually going to be in the Detroit area on the 17th, so we're going to try to go out to that show. Hovering around the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups display was Chris Barillo. He is an ex-Tech TV guy, and I think he's working on a big website right now, or does have a website right now called Locker Gnome. Jason Howell is a This Week in Tech producer. He was wandering around with Brian and Tom. Guy Kawasaki, who is a notable tech guy. He's actually written about Tech Shop quite a bit. I think he's an ex-Apple kind of chief smart guy. and is working on founded a website called AllTop that has a lot of good tech information. I mentioned Bree Prentice, who's from NYC Resistor and is working on MakerBot right now.
At this point in our phone call, the recorder unfortunately cut out on us, but I do want to thank Nick Britsky for updating us on the Consumer Electronics Show, and to pass along his thanks and mine to our friend Cohen Martens in the Netherlands for opening up this opportunity for i3 Detroit to speak on Signal. As we get our sea legs with this podcasting business, we have more and better content lined up for you, and look forward to sharing it over the coming months. What you just heard was the i3 Detroit Hour. It may have only been about 45 minutes, but you should consider that a quarter hour of your free time back in your pocket. Use it to make something cool. If you have comments or questions about our program, please don't hesitate to reach out. We are very open to ideas and criticisms from our audience and want to give you more content you are interested in hearing. You can email us at contact@i3detroit.com. All music we use in our program was found online under the Creative Commons license. To learn more about the music, please email us at contact@i3detroit.com. Thank you for listening.